Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Power Cosmic Podcast, the only podcast made by fans for you. That's right, you can't get more fanboy than me. If you cut me, I bleed Marvel. And if you cut John Cimino, he also bleeds Marvel. There's no go-go checks in our bloodstream. That's right. So let me introduce ourselves once again, in case you weren't listening 10 seconds ago to the intro and you have short attention span. I am Mitchell A.S. Halleck, producer of the world's greatest Comic-Con, happening every August at the Mohegan Sun. It's called Terrific-Con. Why would you go anywhere else? Now, joining me as always from the great state of Massachusetts, the one, the only, John F. Kennedy's illegitimate kid. No, not really. Mr. John Cimino, finder of lost things, writer for such articles that appear in magazines like Back Issue, Alter Ego, and the Jack Kirby Collector. You can find him every Sunday at the Raynham Flea Market, where he will gladly take your money and give you some lost, treasured memories. Hello, John.
Hello, Mickey.
Hey, John. I was just downstairs as we record this, and it's hot out, and I turned the air conditioning off because I wanted to burn some calories. And I was trying to organize, a.k.a. rummage through, a lot of stuff that you just pick up over the years, like a little doodad here, a little toy gun that goes to an action figure here. And before you know it, John, you've got Rubbermaid bins full of what some people would call, like my wife, she would look at that and say, why do we have this garbage here? And I'm like, that's not garbage. That's like, you know, the ray gun for Mr. Fantastic, or that's Dr. Doom's mask, or that's the thing's extra head. And that's a question for today's show, John. Where's the fine line between collector and hoarder?
Well, Nick, it's a good question because I was there and I lived it. Let's just go back to my prime. I started really collecting and taking care of my toys when I was 5 years old. And that went all the way to 2003. Now, if you can understand the size of the toys that I had, the toys and comics that I have, let's just understand something. I had over 5,000 collectibles, and I had the runs of everything. Like, I had over, like, maybe 40 long boxes, and when I ended up selling everything, I did keep some of the stuff that I loved as a kid and all that stuff, but I actually, that's how I bought my house, my first house with my ex-wife. So that, if you think about that, now, it got to the point when we were moving. We moved like in a 3-year span.
Yeah.
And I had to get, now this is how much I had to get, twice with a 14 footer.
Yep.
Okay, twice. I had to use it twice. And I had a Toyota 4Runner that I had to use four times. Now, think about that for a second. Two 14-footers.
That's crazy, now,
Yeah, that's when it was starting to get... I started realizing, like, why do I have all this stuff?
Right.
And I'll tell you the pitch. It really hit me, because you got to remember, this is 2003, and the Marvel heroes weren't as prominent as they were now. And at Foxwoods, I contacted Foxwoods because I heard through the grapevine they were making, what do you call that? You pull down the thing and then the three. It's that gambling thing. You pull it down.
Oh, a slot machine.
Yes. There was the '90s. It was coming out, like, I think in like 2000. It was 2003 because the Hulk movie was just coming out.
But right.
They were making a Marvel superhero slot machine, and I contacted them. It was going to cost me like almost $3,000 for this huge freaking
to
slot
buy
machine.
One. Yeah,
I was going to buy one, and then I thought for a second, Because I'll never forget, that was my realization. It was like, why do I want this?
I'm with you on that.
It just got to me, and then I started looking around, and so when I got married, my ex kind of put thing in my head, and she's like, do you really need this much stuff? It became, I have to get everything.
No, I hear you. And I'm going to tell you where this starts. I'm going to tell you why you had that bug, and I did too. I was a kid, and you know, I had two older sisters. They're like 10 years older, 8 years older. So I was pretty much on my own, you know. And I had my cousin. She was 9 days younger than me, so she would hang out with me. And then I had my other cousins, Tommy. You know, we're an Italian family, so everybody lived near each other, you know. So we'd all walk over to each other's house. And if I didn't have the toy, they would have the toy. And a lot of us had hand-me-down stuff. We'd have a lot of board games, you know, a lot of Life, a lot of Monopolies, all that stuff. Because you have a bunch of kids, it's cheap entertainment. There's no VCRs or all that stuff or video games. This is the early 70s. So there wasn't a lot of toys, but superhero stuff. So I liked comic books. And that, again, I'm going to attest to my dad. Said, here, get some comic books. Don't throw them away. Like your grandmother did to me when I went to the Marine Corps, because he had, I've said it before on the show, he had all the books from the 40s and the 30s and stuff, the very valuable ones, and he collected them. He saved them. He knew, I don't know how, but he knew not to throw them out. He went to the Marines in the late 50s. He comes home, my grandmother threw all his comics out, just like so many people have that story. So when he told me not to throw these comics out, that was ingrained in my head. So I remember my mom, she used to work at the post office. She would work the night shift. So I was by myself and stuff. So she would go to a place, now it's a grocery store. I don't know if it's up in Massachusetts, but it's called Pathmark. Okay? Pathmark grocery stores. And they were open 24 hours a day. And my mom would work late shifts, so she would go grocery shopping literally sometimes at 1 or 2 in the morning. And she brought home, and I'll remember to this day, the world's greatest heroes from Mego, okay? She brought me a Superman 8-inch action figure or doll, whatever you want to call it. But dude, I swear to God, I was so happy it wasn't funny. I used to hold that thing out the window and she would drive and make it look like Superman's flying. You'd hear his cape fluttering in the wind. But you look at the back of the box and guess what they had? Batman and Robin. Oh, well, you know, they're on TV. I got to get them. And then they put these three words that ruin every collector that makes them mentally ill. You want to know what those words are?
I know what they are, but go ahead.
Collect them all.
Yeah.
And those three words are the things that, it's a command. It's like God himself, like in the Bible, like thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not collect them all. Okay. And I remember go to my mom and I'd say, you know, can I do chores around the house? Can I cut the lawn and anything? Why? Well, I want to save up because I want to get Batman. Oh, all right. And these things must have cost like, what, $2 or $3 back in the day?
No, it was like $1.99.
So it wasn't that, you know, we weren't rich, but $1.99 wasn't that bad, you know? So she would buy them. And then what would happen is you would lose a piece. I remember the boots would always fall off. And then you'd lose the sticker on the chest. And then the cape would rip. And they look pretty shoddy, you know? And maybe she'd buy you another one. But then they started doing Spider-Man and Captain America. And then they had Tarzan. And before you know it, you're collecting all of them because, oh, I watched Tarzan movies with Johnny Weissmuller on Saturday mornings. Oh, I have this. And then they had G.I. Joes, you know, the big 12-inch G.I. Joes.
Yep.
And he was like a living comic book because you would buy these play sets, but they were based on adventures like G.I. Joe and the Mummy's Tomb and G.I. Joe Goes to Outer Space. So they would put this little suit on the guy. They'd give him some accessories and they, you know, and you had to get him because that was like the variation. You know, that was like the G.I. Joe that goes to the Arctic, the G.I. Joe that goes underwater and fights sharks. So it was so cool. And then they started making all these other toy lines, but, you know, I didn't get into all of them. I never got into Evil Knievel. I did get into Big Jim, which was a Mattel toy, because he suddenly became Big Jim's wolf pack, and he had a guy with a steel hand, and he had another
Kirby.
Guy. Yeah, another
Jack
guy
Kirby
was an archer.
Jack Kirby actually did the art of the
comic book. I still have the comic. I saved it. And then they started making him have cars and stuff, but it wasn't like, you know, those frou-frou Barbie dolls. These were action heroes because they had muscles and, you know, you could bend their arms and they could smash through walls. And then they had the $6 million man. It was a great time to be a kid because they had so many of these toys out there. And not only that, they had these massive accessories. And here's where the problem comes in. The pieces would get lost. You'd have a $6 million man. You'd roll up the rubber on his arm to take out his bionic components. And there were these little plastic things that looked like wires and such. And you'd lose them, or the dog would eat them, or you'd drop them down the couch and you'd never see them again.
That day, literally that day.
I remember getting, I think it was the Princess Leia action figure. She came with the early bird set. I'm like, I don't want a girl figure. Next thing you know, she had a little tiny blazer pistol. I dropped it in the couch at my grandmother's house. I never saw that thing again. I tore that couch apart, dude. I looked in the seams. I looked under the rug. I was like, where the hell did this little laser pistol go, you know? But that's the thing with all these toys and stuff I have downstairs. Just like you with the collecting. You start getting it because, oh my God. Remember Toy Biz, the line in the 90s? The bigger figures they'd sell at KB Toys?
Oh, yeah.
They started making obscure characters like Captain Universe, Spider-Man 2099. You're like, oh my God, they never made a figure about this guy. And I was already late 20s, early 30s. So I would buy one or two of them. But then that bug gets you, the collect them all thing. And you start collecting them all. And then we moved just like you did. I had the 13, 14 foot truck. And I remember the most stuff that we moved was boxes of comic books. And then I had like Rubbermaid bins of toys. And then what happened? They re-released the Star Wars toys in 1995. And then I had to start getting all the Star Wars toys again because I had them as a kid and I threw some of them out. So what is this? I mean, what you had it too. And my wife, you know what the word an enabler is? It's like the person that gives the money to the junkie to make them go buy their drugs or their booze, you know?
Yeah, but what's funny, Mitt,
what?
Where you were getting them all, I was like getting all the folk stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I was always into one character, but I happened to get obsessed with the Hulk when the Hulk started getting huge at 78 and 79 and 80. And so I would start getting all that up. And there were so many different Hulk products at that time. I don't know if you know this, but in 1989 and 1980, they made more Hulk stuff than anything else because he was the biggest thing in the world.
Probably more than Spider-Man.
Yeah, him too, though. Oh, yeah, but I'm just saying because of the Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno thing that was going on. But, so I would always, and Spider-Man I love too, but I never really, like, when it said collect them all, I would get all the Hulks and the Hulk Spider-Mans in that line. I would get all, like, if it was plates, if it was mugs, if it was stretch figures or to what painting kits, whatever it be, I'd always get the Hulk.
Now,
one.
Did you open them up or did you save them in the
box?
Well,
see, I did and I didn't. There was, for some reason, I was very smart to, like, I did open a lot of them, yes, and then I would try to keep the box. But I always loved the boxes.
Oh,
and
yeah. Oh, God, I love the graph. And that's, I become a graphic designer years later and design packaging. I mean, that's, it was probably in my head. And the best thing I would do is draw comic book packaging. But
yeah,
the,
absolutely.
Yeah, but you didn't know, you didn't have an inkling as a kid that this might be valuable someday, right?
No. I just liked the way it looked. I liked that, the what it had. I just liked that stuff. And if I knew when I was older, like that, if I could have been older, and I would have gotten a lot, even more of them. But you know, when you're a kid, that you got that wanderlust. So everything is, you know, when you don't have that dollar, you can't do it. And you're
So
it makes it more. You want it more. So that's what you live with. But when I started getting older, like I said, and I started accumulating so much stuff, it was absolutely ridiculous, and it got to become burdensome. So to answer, let's go back to answer the question here. What you were saying, when is too much? When it becomes burdensome, because I know collectors that will refinance. Here's the deal: refinance their house so they can get that money and then buy more stuff.
No. That's, now to me, I would say that's crazy because, you know, I got a family. You know, I got two boys that are going to college and stuff. I could never put my hobby, quote unquote, before that because, you know, you got to provide. You got to
No, I understand that, but they do that.
I know they do. This is not the first time I heard this. I've been to Rancho Obi-Wan, which is the Star Wars Collector Museum. It's run by a guy named Steve Sansweet, who has, I think, the Guinness World Book record for the most Star Wars toys. And he was a reporter, I believe, for the Wall Street Journal. And he started just like everybody else. I've interviewed him. I've met him several times. I've been to his house. He just got a couple things he liked. He used to collect these Japanese robot toys, okay? These space toys from the 60s. This is before the internet. And he'd go to toy swap meets and, you know, that type of thing. And you'd have pen pals and want ads. And he would do stuff. There was no way to really get a global hobby going. And then he started getting into Star Wars. So he would sell some of the older Japanese robot toys to get money to pay for his Star Wars collection. And he started getting one of everything. And then he started getting two of everything. One to open, to play with or whatever, or pose, and one to keep mint in package. So now you're doubling your take. You know what I mean? Now you're buying two of everything, which is kind of like, oh, okay. Space becomes an issue. And I'm not talking about outer space. I'm talking physically. And he would have storage units, and he would, like, every square inch of his house was, you know, jam-packed with stuff, you know? And that's what happens with a lot of people. Like now, I'm down in the basement now, dude. I've got boxes of books that I've saved. I had magazines, like, you know, that had Star Wars or Spider-Man on them. And then you go, this is cool. But like you said, when your ex-wife asked you, and my wife, she enabled, here's what my wife did. When we started making money and we didn't have kids, she said to me, go ahead and get it if you really want it. Because I was like you. I'm like, well, that's too much money. I can't get it. But when she said that, and I tell her that to this day sometimes, she was part of the thing because we didn't have kids and we were making good money. And it's like, oh, if you want to go buy that action figure for $10 and pose it on your desk, go ahead and do it. But they just don't make one action figure. They make 20 action figures. And then they have variants. And then they have chases. And then the collector mentality, that OCD in your head,
oh yeah,
wants to get all of them. And then you start collecting it. And like you said, before you know it, you've got like a problem because you've got a lot of stuff. I've never not paid the bills because I had to buy a toy, or I never mortgaged the house. But some of these people you talk about.
I've had two Hulk pinball machines from the 70s. I had two of them.
I always wanted a pinball machine. That's one of my dreams to have, like, an Indiana Jones pinball.
But it got to, like...
But they're huge.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is when it becomes burdensome. So I'll say this about it. If you do have the money and you can do that, and you have that disposable income, you know, go for it. And if you have the space, go for it. But when it becomes a problem, like, I mean, I'll tell you, the best collections that I have found in all my years of doing that are the weirdo hoarders, that they live in these weird places, and it's just, but they got everything. And you can, it's just like, where are they living? It's like in their closet.
I mean, you mean everything. You mean like every G.I. Joe, every Transformer.
Yeah, they got so, and you can, and a lot of them are a little bit, gonna be honest, a lot of them are a little bit off, but they always have the best stuff. But I look at it this way, it's like, when it's in the way, when it's in the, when it, like I said, becomes exhausting, and you find yourself, I think we talked about this before, have you ever seen American Splendor? Have you ever seen
that
movie?
Oh, God, the movie? Yeah, the Harvey Pekar story.
That's a perfect example.
Starring New Haven's own Paul Giamatti, by the way.
But he gets obsessed with the jazz records, remember that?
Yes.
And he's spending everything he has on these jazz records, and then he's sitting on a bench one day, and he's looking at the record, and it was just like, what is that all about? Like, it's just like, you spend, because I'm going to tell you right now, how much I spent on my collection for all those years. I got a lot of money for that, but I didn't get all the money I spent on that, because I lost a lot of money too. Because if you think of all the years that I bought, and that's like I said, it's a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of effort. And the funny thing is, once you get everything, You kind of look. You know me. My holy grail was getting that Mego last book. And I ended up getting the best one in the world. But after I got it, I was kind of like, well, what now?
Oh, I know. I I hear you. And the thing is, you were obsessed about the Hulk. I started doing one particular thing because, like I said, I have a habit of jumping on different things. And I was listening to James Gunn. I met him at the Hasbro toy show a couple weeks ago. And he said the same thing, that he would get into certain things and get everything he could for about, you know, 2 years on a certain topic or a hobby interest. And then he'd look at it and go, why did I get this? Why did I buy this? And then he'd go get something else. So there is some kind of, I don't know what it is. I honestly, and I know there's some people out there that unfortunately have mental illness and become what they call hoarders and have like really problems. I'm talking like health. Yeah. I'm talking like you can't go in their houses because there's like, what's the word I'm looking at? Like the Board of Health condemns it because there's like backed up.
People come back rich. People collect trash, you know?
Well, that's what it becomes, because my wife will say sometimes, she'll say, oh, you know, how many comic books can you have? And because we know friends like Matt Herring, who has like 30-something thousand comics, and I've got a pile of books and such like that. But, and I've said this to Ordway, too, because he collects things as well. And he collects a lot of toys. He has a lot of Captain Marvel and Superman toys and such. But he said it to me, once you stop keeping it organized, then that's when it gets a little out of control. You know what I'm saying? When there's this, like, boxes of old magazines or mail or newspapers or clothes or God knows what the hell they're collecting, that's when it starts becoming healthy.
What I ended up doing, how I kind of stated my thirst for all this, was when I sold off everything, I kept about maybe 200 items, but it was all the items.
So you went from 5,000 items down to 200?
Yes, I believe that. Listen to this. People don't. Years ago, do you remember Toy Shop Weekly? Remember that?
Yeah.
They wanted to do an interview with me because I had one of the world's largest Hulk collections, and they wanted to. But I didn't want to do it because I was afraid that, you know, people would know where I would live,
and they'd come and steal your stuff.
But, you mean, I had everything. We're talking about those. FF number one all the way up, AF-15 all the way up, Hulk 1 all the way up, Avengers 1, I had like 50, it was crazy.
Oh my God, I would have killed to see that.
You gotta remember, oh, you would have killed, I mean, it was, but now then with all the toys, you can ask Keith Gleason about the collection it was ridiculous, but I'll tell you this, like, I think it starts off, like I said, I only kept about 200 pieces, but it was all the pieces that meant something to me as a kid.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're trying to always go for. It's like, well, first we want the stuff because we remember it and we loved it when we were a kid. But
right.
then it kind of snowballs. It's like, well, now I want this. Because, Mitch, let's be honest. I know when your wife said to you, how many comics can you get? There's always another comic.
Oh,
I
mean, God, yeah. I come home every week with them. But
then it's not just getting the next comic. Now it's getting it in better condition. Well, and then, like, oh my God, I have a 7.0, but I don't have a 7.0.
Well, you know what the funnier thing is? There wasn't as much of this stuff as there is now. I mean, there's so much merchandise. Yeah. I'm sitting here talking to you now. I got a Captain America pen because I was at Walgreens, and they had all the school supplies on, like, 75% off. And I looked over, and they had a pack of Marvel comic pens. And I go, oh, I need a pen. So why not? It's only a quarter. But I'm looking at it, and I love it because I'm looking at the artwork. It's John Buscema. It's Iron Man. And I can just tell who drew it just by looking at the artwork. There's Bob Layton stuff. But it's kind of cool to have a pen. But I'm not going to collect thousands of them, you know?
No, it's a part of us. You know, these things are a part of us. We'll always, but it can accumulate so fast. And as we know, now there's more of that stuff out there than ever now.
Did you give yourself an allowance every week and say, this is the money I'm going to use to buy stuff?
No, I would say because I was making a lot of money, and I was, and it became just an obsession.
Yeah.
I mean, I was dropping thousands a week, Mitch.
Yeah.
Literally, I could probably between 500...
Are you kidding me?
No, yeah, it was ridiculous.
Well, see, again, you didn't have any kids.
No kids at that time, no. That's right. But, like, I look back on it, and I have to admit, things weren't as expensive. They were expensive, but
no,
not
but they weren't thousands. No. They were a couple $100, you know.
Right, and then you got to remember, when I started collecting comics in the early 80s, I remember picking up a Journey into Mystery 112 for $8.50.
Really?
You know, they weren't that expensive. Sure, like, think about this. In 1990, a mint condition Amazing Fantasy 15 was only $3,000. Think about that.
I know, but 1990, $3,000 was a lot of money, you know?
No, yes, it was a lot of money. So, I mean, but if you look at the landscape of comics at that time, so I'm talking about 85, yeah. 86 when I started collecting. So that's why those prices, yeah, $8.50 was a lot for a comic. $12 was a lot.
Right.
But it was in the, you know what, the difference with me, Mitch, though, I come from a Spanish-Italian family,
yeah.
too, and we always had to work, so I
yeah,
was
Yeah, exactly,
working.
Yeah, my family would be like,
working,
what are you, nuts?
So I had money, but, you know, I saved money, but so I could buy this, I could
yeah,
spend $8
yeah,
on it,
yeah.
But, once again, it got to the point where, what? How much is too much? I guess you. Some people never see it. Some people do. Like me, I can't even think of collecting anything anymore. I have those items that I had when I was a kid. Sure, there's a few items I like, and I set up my shop and with
yep.
a lot of high-end
yep.
stuff and fun, but I'm not in that place anymore where... Because, listen, to be honest with you, if I want to drop $20,000 on a comic book, I can do that. I can.
Yeah, but here, going back to the collecting versus hoarding thing, what was the epiphany, though? What was the realization, like the alcoholics have that moment of clarity when they know they're screwed up? What did you, it was a slot machine? That's what told you that
yeah,
enough?
Because I was thinking, this is what I was thinking when I already talked to the people and I was going to buy
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
$1,000. But I was thinking this is what I was thinking. Where am I going to put it? Now, looking at the room, it was so overflowing.
Oh, God, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I was going to buy, do you know what a pachinko machine is?
What is it?
It's a Japanese gambling machine, kind of like a slot machine, with these little
okay.
metal balls in them. And you turn a knob, and these little balls come down, and you have to like try to scoop them up. And they do them all the time. Pachinko machines, I think they're called. You might have seen them. They're over in they're like slot machines in Japan. So anyway,
okay.
they've done just like you. They've done Indiana Jones ones and Star Wars ones, and they've got these little videos in them, and the lights on them, and they make the music, and they have the dialogue from the movies. And they were only about maybe $500 to $600, okay? And they're very small. They're not as big as a pinball machine. They're probably the size of, like, I don't know, like 2 foot by 3 foot or something like that, you know? And I was going to get one because they made an Indiana Jones one. I'm a big fan of Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed. But I was like, and I had the guy, and he was going to ship it to me, and I was going to put it downstairs, and my kids were little. I'm like, oh, they could play it. And I'm thinking to myself, what the hell am I going to do with this big freaking, and it's almost like the same thing. I mean, but this was probably like 2009 or 10. And our good friend Les David, God bless Les David, he comes to the show every year. He is the proprietor and the curator of the world's biggest Indiana Jones collection.
Yep, great guy.
Yeah, he has a museum. He has a museum. He's turned his part of his house, and it's like a farmhouse, into a museum. And you go in there, and they have every single Indiana Jones bit of merchandise. Hats, toys, posters, pinball machines, models. And he's made like replicas from the movies, the Ark of the Covenant, where the light comes out and that makes the noise. But again... It's so cool to visit that and see that, but I can't imagine me making it.
But Mitch, let me say this about difference between Les and a lot of the other collectors I do, and I hope Les will listen to this, because Les has his shit together. Like,
oh, God, yeah. Les is a professional. He's worked for, like, Technicolor and movie industries.
But,
yeah, he's a real deal, yeah.
No, he's the real deal. But see how he turned his collection into something that he can give back, and he has it's like a ride, right?
Oh, God, it's amazing.
See, that's different. He actually saw the bigger picture where he turned his collection. Les is a small breed. I mean, I don't know how many collectors you've seen in your lifetime, but I know I've seen a freaking thousands of them. And majority of them aren't like Les. When you go into their house, they're like, their stuff is under their bed, on top of their bed, and it's like, I'm like, where the hell? Like, how do you function?
Shut up! That's my downstairs right now that I was cleaning out before I called you for today. I mean, no.
Yeah, but Mitch,
what?
I mean, let's.
No. Listen to me. I've got to throw away some stuff, and it's hard to part with some stuff. But then I realize there's certain things that are not worth anything. I have a lot of VHS tapes downstairs. garbage. I have a lot of DVDs. Nobody wants this stuff anymore, right?
Mitch, I'm coming over to buy stuff so I can sell it to the public. That's what we're going to do.
No, I did. Today I just found a collection of MASH DVD collections, and I'm like, why do I have these? I can watch MASH at any time. It's on, like, on demand, you know?
Oh, I know.
You know what's funny, though? I have thought of this. Everybody's going to this digital stuff. They watch things on their iPhones and everything, and everyone's getting rid of the old CD players and the old hard copy things. What if there's a technology nightmare and there is no more internet? No one's going to be able to watch those things. So all these old DVDs and VHS tapes might become valuable again, like records are, because that's the only way you could watch these things.
Yeah, but see, that's the whole thing. That's what you just said there. Well, it could be worth something. Well, I'm not going to throw it. And right there's that mentality you're just talking about. You didn't even realize it. You just did it. That it comes with the collectors. Like, oh, it'll be worth something later. Oh, I'll just get that.
Well, I've never sold more than, I can tell you the few things in my life that I've ever sold. I sold a G.I. Joe issue 1. I'm not like you. I've never sold stuff. I have thought about opening my own comic book store, and it might happen pretty soon in a year or two, because that way I could keep the collection kind of and make money at the same time and actually enjoy this stuff.
Well, I hope so. I mean, well, you're a businessman, Mitch. You're a thinker. It's like I said, if you're not neglecting your kids,
no, they're all going to colleges and they all have cars.
No, not you, but I'm talking about the general public. Like, because we go back to the question, how much is too much? Me, I just don't. I have come to the point. Like what I was saying earlier about I can get a $20,000 comic and just put it away. That's fine. I've come to the point in my life where I became financially successful so that I got everything I ever wanted as a kid, and I updated and I got the stuff that I've always wanted.
Right.
I have all that stuff. Now it's more of like giving it back to people, like getting stuff and then giving it back. So I'm content what I have, because we have to also think about this. When we're dead, this stuff is going to come with you.
Oh, my God. I said that to Steve Sansweet, the Star Wars guy. It's in the interview. I said, have you ever thought about what you're going to do with all this when you die? He goes, no, because if I'm dead, I won't care. And I go, and it's true.
Larry says a great thing because, you know, he has a lot of stuff. And it's not a lot, but a lot of stuff that he's accumulated through the ages. And
like the Spider-Man costume.
But he says, when I'm dead, he goes, I know, his wife, Dan, and she goes, she'll be putting this stuff up. He goes, I know she's going to be making a fortune and all stuff. He goes, when I'm dead, it's gone anyways, you know?
Yeah.
And it's true. It's like, to me at least, my daughter knows what this stuff is, and then, you know, if she wants to sell it, let her sell it, and somebody else will enjoy it. But the truth is when you're gone, you're gone.
You don't care, exactly. No, and as we're going to wrap this up soon, and I go back down into the Temple of Doom and start going through boxes, the weird thing is, and that's the old sentimental Italian in me, lots of times, because my kids are grown up now, one's in college, one's about to leave for college, I will find a toy, or because they were into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when they were little, so they have a whole pile of toys, and then they like something called the Rescue Heroes, which was all about firemen and policemen. I never threw those toys out, because I keep thinking maybe someday they'll be like me, because my dad moved, and I lost a lot of my toys in the late 70s. I mean, everything got thrown away. I remember that day, like the Great Purge, I call it. And we were moving, and my mom's like, just take what you want. Take your comic books, but something we can carry. We're not taking all that stuff. And I threw out so many toys, man. All my $6 million man, all my G.I. Joe. And then another thing that happens is when you start getting into girls. I'm talking the magic age of 13 or 14. And suddenly all that is baby stuff. All the things you had was baby stuff, and you don't want to be reminded of your baby stuff. And your friends will tell you, oh, you're still reading funny books, you're still reading toy or collecting dolls, and you don't want to be that kid. You want to be a grown-up. So that's another thing that causes you to throw out stuff. And I remember that. No, I'm just going to say that happened to me. I remember I threw out a lot of my stuff, but I did save all my little Star Wars action figures, because as much as people were like, oh, come on, that's baby stuff, I enjoyed those movies so much, and I enjoyed the getting the box and the artwork and the little figures. They were so cool, and plus they didn't take up a lot of space. Maybe that's why I didn't throw them out too. I put them in a shoebox and kept them, but I held on to that stuff too. And I saw my son do the same thing when he was around 13 or 14. He used to collect a lot of these superhero, sports figures. These Todd McFarlane, what do you call those? The little Spawn? Statues. Which ones?
What, Spawn figures?
Not the Spawn figures, but he had a line of Major League ball players. I can't remember. McFarlane football figures and baseball figures. And my son had them. And he still does, whether he knows it or not, because all I did was put him in a bin and put him in the attic because I figured someday he might want them.
Starting lineup figures, right?
Starting lineup, that's it, the starting lineup stuff. And my son was so into sports, but he would go and get the Mickey Mantles, the rare ones and stuff. And then he just, on a dime, just didn't care anymore about it. He just grew up.
Yeah, and the thing is, and some people, they grow out of it. Some people never do. Some people go back. I mean, this is, let's be honest, we're a little bit different.
I turned my hobby into an annual event, dude. I thought about that when you were saying it. Like, you sell stuff and make money. I go, hey, wait a minute. I run a comic book convention every August.
Yeah, so we're kind of part of it.
Yeah.
Like we're part, and look, I write for these magazines, and what do I write about? All that stuff. Yeah. And now,
I'm the king of the nerds around here on the radio because of the shows. That's how I got the name.
And then I deal with, I manage Roy Thomas, and he's a part of comic history. So we've kind of ingrained ourselves into the culture, so we're kind of part of it, you know?
You do a weekly podcast about toys and collecting.
Oh, and Mitch, I hate to change the subject. Just before we clip out of there, I wanted to say this earlier. I don't know when this is exactly coming out, but just like I want everyone to know that our buddy Reed Tucker's book, Slugfest, is coming out. It's going to hit bookstores all across the country on October 3rd, and you can go to Amazon. It's called Slugfest, the inside story of the epic 50-year war between DC and Marvel, and it's got a lot of all behind the scenes. He interviewed a lot of people, and just want people to know,
It's about the ongoing war between Marvel versus DC. You know what would be a good idea? We should get Reed on the show.
We can do it tomorrow.
We see Reed all the time. He was at Terrificon, you know. I'll probably see him at New York Comic Con this year. I'm going to be there for 4 days.
I asked him to come visit me and Roy in New Jersey. So if you
I'll see him before then. I'll see him in like 2 weeks.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Maybe you can interview him.
He hung out at my friend's booth last year for 3 hours. He sat there. It was me, Rob Liefeld, Jerry Ordway, Barry Kitson, and David Finch. And there's Reed Tucker sitting there. We're all eating bagels and cream cheese and talking to each other. And Reed was having a blast.
Yeah, he's one of the best guys, and I'm so honored to help him with this book, and I got him a lot of interviews and all that stuff, and it's going to be out, and it's already getting rave reviews.
Yeah, I'm going to make sure I get a copy to add to my collection.
Yeah, it's called Slugfest, the epic 50-year battle between Marvel and DC. Yeah. And it's going to be great. So I just wanted to
throw that. You know what? I'll move this one up. I'll put this episode on right after we do the radio play. So that's going to probably be the first week, the week of New York Comic Con probably. That's when this will be on.
Yeah. So. And I have a copy coming. He told me he already got his copy. My copy is coming. It's coming in any day now.
All right. Well, that's cool to know. And then we can talk about more collecting. So there really is no answer. So if you are listening to this show and you can't pay your monthly bills, God forbid you can't pay your electric or your utilities because you're buying a comic book or a statue or whatever have you, maybe it's time to reevaluate why you're doing this stuff. Right, John?
On another note, if you're money and you want to buy $1 million Picasso, as long as you know, once again, and you can do anything
if
in this
it makes
world,
you happy, I suppose, but again...
Yeah, but as long as it doesn't impose, like, it doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah, no, if it's not hurting anybody, because I was going to say, like, an alcoholic is happy when he gets a drink, and a junkie's happy when he puts a needle in his arm.
Are you going to buy that comic, or are you going to give your kid, like, food tonight? You know, that's where it's...
Yeah, if you're doing something like that, for God's sakes, don't. And if you can't walk through your house and you're collecting feces... If you collect feces, I looked it up in the hoarders thing. That's one of the telltale signs you got a problem. If you're not just collecting shit like toys and stuff, that's fine. But if you're collecting actual shit like feces, you gotta go see a doctor because you've got some. Your train is off the tracks. Okay, your elevator's not going to the top. My dad would say you're fucking nuts. That's what my dad would say.
How about this one? A guy came up to me it was last year, I think, at my booth, and he asked if I bought real human skulls.
No, don't laugh. I had a guy wanted to sell a booth at Terrificon that wanted to sell bones, human bones. And I said, no, that's just creeping me out. I can't do that.
I was like, sorry. Yeah, I was like, I don't know.
Nah,
sorry.
I was too weirded out by that shit. I was like, I ain't doing that.
I don't want somebody's skull.
I guess we have no answer. And then you could probably come over here and just slap me silly because you'll be like, why are you saving this? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, well, like I said, Mitch, you got your shit together, though. Like,
you'd be surprised, John. You go downstairs in the basement, because you come over the house. We all know you've used my bathroom because you took a picture of yourself peeing. But if you never went downstairs, and see, it's not all over the house. I guess I'm not that bad, because when you walk into our house, you see a dining room, you see a living room, a kitchen. It looks normal. There's not stuff everywhere. You go downstairs in the Temple of Doom. That's what I call the basement, where we made like a little family room. Oh my God, there's comic book boxes everywhere, there's toys, and you know, but it's all contained down there. But it does spill over now and then, you know.
But I think the overall answer to the question is, like I said, if you're not hurting anybody and you're not imposing it, or it's not causing you stress in your life or anything, collect all you want.
But maybe one day it was selling it all off. That's another thing. I've thought about that. What if I got rid of everything?
Well, sell it to me, and I'll get into people's hands. Because there's always another Mitchie, there's always another John, there's always another whatever, another guy.
Wait, we didn't say the magic word this week, Scott Martin. There's always a Scott Martin out there.
Yeah, that's it.
He collects stuff, too. I see him buying stuff, so.
Hey, you know what? We'll always be getting this or looking at it till the end of time. I mean, till the end of our lifetime. So.
Well, you know, like I tell my wife lots of times, I go, look, I don't go skirt chasing, I don't go boozing, I don't take drugs. I could be doing something else. I could have another type of vice. I'm going to a comic book store in a couple minutes on Wednesday to look at the new books and the old books, and then come home and you know, rummage through my new omnibus I just got in the mail. You know, I'm not hurting anybody. I could be doing a lot worse with my money and family life.
I guess that ends it, though. But you know, don't hurt anybody. Get your act together. Collect all you want.
There you go. Collect them all. Collect them all.
And how do we end it, Mitch?
I don't know, John. I want to go out and get that Hulk slot machine.
No, it wasn't Hulk. It was all the Marvel heroes. And it was the first time, like, they were all on. I mean, you got to remember, this stuff wasn't as mass produced. Now there's a ton of that stuff out there. But
Let me tell you, you know what I was playing last night? My son has a PlayStation, and Marvel vs. Capcom came out. And I'm not a big video game guy, but I had pre-ordered it only because I stayed up all night playing that thing, dude. I'm 51 years old. The animation on these things is so great. There's a story in there about how Thanos is there and they have to get the Infinity Gems and they have to stop him from taking over the universe and he's fighting Ultron. Oh my God, man. I'm like, this is a living comic book. And from time to time, you get to be those characters and you get to beat the hell out of each other. So,
All right.
I'm going to go get my medicine now because I have to go wait for the mailman because he's bringing me more shit. All right, say it, Johnny. Wrap it up.
And that's that.
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.